You're a fake. You're a fraud. You're so deeply flawed. No one cares anyway or wants to hear what you got to say. Just wait for the other shoe to drop. You're alone. You are your past. Gotta get back to your comfort zone fast. You'll never be safe being who you really are.
Episode 13, Life in the Body.
It's a scarcity complex podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome to this week's episode of the Scarcity Complex podcast. My name is Jay and I will be your host slash facilitator slash whatever the hell you want to call me as we continue on this adventure together. I hope you're having a great July. It's hard to believe that half of 2021 is already over. This is only my second podcast of 2021, and if you haven't done this yet and you've been enjoying these episodes or you enjoy today's show, it would mean a lot to me if you'd take the time to go on whatever platform you're listening to this to and just give it a quick ranking. The more people that do that, the more people that will probably continue to hear the show. And despite my little to no promotion, not only of not advertising this podcast, but hardly even telling people about it, it seems to be growing. So whoever you are listening to this episode and subscribing to the Scarcity Complex podcast, I thank you because this has been a fun adventure for me. And it means a lot that obviously that you're getting something out of this as well. So today's episode is actually a conversation that I recorded over 2 years ago, before COVID, before I had even launched my podcast. And it was with one of my best friends named Brendan Miller. When I asked Brendan how he wanted to be introduced, there's a lot of different things he could have spouted off from his resume. But Brendan is a very humble guy. And so what he really wanted me to mention was one of his passion projects that he's working on right now, which is called To Gather, like the number two and the word gather. But it's this really amazing project that he's been working on as a co-founder and the chief technical officer of To Gather. That is this plan to build a trustworthy and democratic new digital commons. I know that might sound like a really high concept, but it's super practical of what he's working on. And you can click on the website link that's included in today's summary of the show to find out more information. And when he's not doing that or dancing or drumming, he lives happily in Venice Beach, California, with his wife, Ziri, who some of you may remember, I've already interviewed on the topic of death and rebirth. But our conversation basically evolved into a discussion of what does it mean to really live in our heart? And how do we do that in terms of inhabiting our bodies? Because we tend to kind of live so disconnected, you know, from the fact that we do have a body and we tend to live obviously more in the head. And so we talked about a lot of different things, and I think you're going to really enjoy this conversation. And I'd kind of held off airing it because I was hoping to air it during a time when we're more free to move around and connect with other people, because we talk about movement and dance and things that you can do in a community-oriented way. And so I was hoping that when I aired this, there would be lots of opportunity for that. But this is the end of July, and as I air this, we are now what looks like heading into another surge of a different variant of COVID. So I just thought it would be a good time to release it either way. And one of the things about listening to this 2 years later is that this was my first conversation I'd ever recorded. And I was a green podcaster. I didn't have a lot of confidence and had a lot of fear and all that kind of stuff. And it was really fun to listen to it 2 years later, meaning now, and to hear how well it's aged. So Brendan, as you're listening to this, I just want to let you know that we age well. So without any further delays, here is my conversation with Brendan Miller. I hope you enjoy today's show. You're someone that pushes yourself outside of your comfort zone. And I know I witnessed that in you. And I think you see that in me. And one of the great things about being friends is I feel like we support each other in that. And I don't know, I've known you for a few years now and looking at probably both of us, if you like.
Yeah, it's probably about 7 years now.
Yeah, like 7 years. And if you looked at me, you'd be like, wow, you're like a different person from 7 years ago. You know, and I remember seeing you when you first moved to LA. Mm-hmm. And so like, I feel like we do have some shared there's some shared experiences, I think, like you and I both, like I grew up evangelical, you grew up
Catholic.
Mm-hmm. And something that one of those things I feel like both of those traditions don't intentionally teach, but by not teaching it, they kind of teach it, is this whole idea that we have bodies.
Wait, what?
What? Uh-huh. And this idea of like, what does it mean to,
again, well, and then that bodies are bad or dangerous, right, or a problem or something. Yeah. You know? I think that shows up in both.
Yeah. And then for you, and I mean, I've done the same, but I know you've done a lot of, I don't know if somebody's listening to this, they may or may not know what this is, but I always say they've done that movement work. And, you know, we live in California, so this is kind of normal, maybe, compared to maybe other places, although I think it's beginning to happen more mm-hmm. and more places. But like, I grew up thinking I don't have a dancing bone in my body. Mm-hmm. I don't have rhythm.
Yeah, sure.
And, and I know you've done, if you're comfortable talking about this. Okay. I mean, you've done a lot of work yourself as well on like just dance and mm-hmm. something that you've to the
point. Yeah, more recently in the past. Yeah. Like, 7-8 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm almost 45 now, and it's only a small portion of my life where I've,
sure,
you know, been connected to the value of this to me and to my life and the joy that it brings, you know. But before then, you know, I do put it in a line of, let's say, embodied, experiential, like mystical, you know. It's like, you know, I have mystical experiences while I'm dancing, and you know, I've done meditation retreats and different kind of practices, yoga, whatever it might be. But I've found for me that dancing is one of the most direct connections to my core self, and also to an experience of divinity, and also of like a divine community, you know. And so I'm grateful for some, you know, there's different things it's called. It's ecstatic dance, it's five rhythms, it's soul motion, you know, these kinds of things. There's different little brandings of it, but fundamentally it's free movement, you know, to move
meaning,
how you feel.
I was just going to say, meaning that there isn't a right or a wrong way, right? It's like you get to like say right now, like for somebody that's never done that, like walk them through like, okay, right now I just feel like my shoulder wants to move, right? So you just let your shoulder
I'll tell
move.
You how it started for me. Is, yeah. I mean, so I had, you know, when I was in my 20s and stuff, I would occasionally find some friends to like go out to a dance club with. But of course, I had to be really drunk and, you know.
People love to dance when they're drunk.
Yeah,
right?
Well,
isn't that interesting?
You know, alcohol is one way to loosen inhibitions and to, you know, free that up. But I found that it's better to do it without that now. But and then I also went to music festivals, and I love that, you know, being the connection of nature, mm-hmm. being outside a big group of people, like the anonymity, and also, you know, festivals bring people from all over. It's not like a small town or something, of course. So yeah, there's like this anonymity and a freedom to just move how I wanted to. So I did festivals, and then when I got to LA, I realized, oh wow, there's a lot of this ecstatic dance and movement available. And so as I discovered that, it became more and more interesting to me. But how I started, just to give people a sense, is I, you know, like, let's say if it's like a 2-hour class, I would have my eyes closed for an hour and a half of it. I didn't want any feedback from anybody, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a room full of people. Also, it was important for me to be in a room full of people. I wouldn't have wanted to do it on my own in my room. It wouldn't have the same juice and power, you know?
Yeah.
But so it's an arc of music, you know, different types of music to evoke different kinds of things. And yeah, that's what I did, is I tuned in to how did I feel, you know. And my day job is I deal with computers, you know. I'm on a computer for a lot of the day sitting. And I also have herniated a disc in my neck about 10 years ago. So I've had injuries related to alignment and stuff like this. And so, you know, after a week of sitting, if I go to class on the weekend, I'm basically undoing, you know, the damage of all of that sitting, and I'm finding freedom in my body, and just, you know, might start with a little wiggling, a little moving, some stretching, and I'm listening, you know, I'm tuning in to what my body wants me to do. And there's a lot of times where you know, I had to discover that, of course, over different, you know, various classes and years of just, okay, wow, I didn't even know that part of my body needed attention. You know, mm-hmm. it's like, or how it's connected to this other part and why this one part hurts all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And so to find those connections and do give myself time for that exploration, it's been great for my body, but it also is great for my emotions and also my kind of healthy boundaries with other people because,
yeah.
you know, that's the great thing about these is that you can do your own thing, but if you want, you can choose to try to engage with other people. I say try because they are also on their own process and they yeah. may or may not want to dance with you at that moment in time or,
yeah.
And so, you know, to navigate gracefully, like, in a dance, you know, and I dance has a lot of power and it's metaphor for me of yeah. the way that I want to live of the gracefulness of dance, you know, mm-hmm. so I don't have to be rude and say, no, I don't want to dance now, go away. You know, mm-hmm. I can just gently smile and kind of, a little turn or something, you know, is sure. all that it takes to communicate that sometimes. And some people need more, you know, directness or something, but I find that it, yeah, there's a lot of flow that's possible. And the, you know, as I, you know, if I do that hour and a half, you know, then maybe there's a half an hour where I feel good enough in my body and in my spirit where I want to play with other people and right. engage a little bit and experience that. So
gosh,
trusting yeah. myself and finding that yeah, way to kind of navigate, you know, and from a healthy boundary it's been great to learn a lot about that.
Well, and you just described, I think, so well the like, if somebody's never done what you're describing, they might be like, what, that sounds crazy, I could never do something like that. And yet I relate to what you were sharing because I remember when I first went to my first thing, I think like the eyes closed thing I just really connected with because I remember there was something, and I'm curious what comes up for you, but there was something for me in that moment of trying something so new and so vulnerable, and I'm doing it right now as I'm talking, I'm closing my eyes for some reason. I needed that safety.
Yeah,
I needed
safety.
That sense of like, because this was so new, it was such a big deal for me to even be doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
That I couldn't at that point in time deal with, even though it's my perception, I couldn't deal with all the other people's energy or feedback yeah. that may or may not come, like you
exactly,
said.
Exactly, yeah. And so, yeah, and demands, judgments,
yeah.
Various things. And yeah, that safety, I needed it. And the permission, you know, this is what I love about these spaces is there's, as long as you're respectful of other people, you know, it depends on which class you go to. Some are more kind of have more structure, but yeah. the ones that I started with had very little structure. And so I was like, okay, what do I need now? I don't want to deal with people right now. And yeah. I just want to tune in, listen to this music and, you know, work on some of these things that are tight or whatever, you know, and then more space opened up, but it was all my choice. And it was up to me about how to pace that. Nobody was pushing me. And, you know, I love the metaphor of, you know, nature metaphors and like the flower, you know, what happens if you try to force a bud to open? You're going to destroy it. You're going to smush it. You know, you're going to rip it open. It's not going to, you have to let a flower unfold in its own way. And I think we're all flowers in that sense of, you know, if we give ourselves the space, there's a very gentle, amazing, beautiful opening that can happen, but it needs a greenhouse, you know,
yeah.
it needs care and it needs patience.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about you, but like, I wouldn't say like when I started doing movement stuff that I all of a sudden, I didn't necessarily felt like I was doing something wrong, but it felt like, okay, this is something that I don't have a container for this. I didn't grow up, you know, with this. And so yeah, just this idea of, and I love that we're literally talking about dance, but taking it like to the metaphor level, like you were earlier, of like, what if all of life is a dance? Like, mm-hmm. what if mm-hmm. this, that we're here to stretch into these areas that are outside of our box that we were never told even existed, much less we're allowed to play.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then what I heard you saying is how you were kind of taking care of yourself, almost your flower analogy. that you needed to close your eyes. Mm-hmm. I remember, like, same thing. That's what I needed to do, because that was your way of giving yourself kindness, because you were in the greenhouse, you showed up. Mm-hmm. But in that moment, you know, and I just think there's got to be a lot of people that can probably relate to that, to something in their life where they feel like, that's like a fish out of water for me. Mm-hmm. I could never... You know.
Well, and you know, I'm so grateful to these spaces, because there's leaders, you know, and there's a community of people who are all offering this to each other,
yeah.
You know, and so I'm grateful to that greenhouse that we all create to, you know, with each other. And yeah, the closing the eyes, it's also, yeah, the visually, you know, visual feedback is very demanding to me. You know, like if I'm in a restaurant and there's a TV screen on, you know, I don't even want to look at it, but I can't help it, you know? And so I have to close my eyes, and then I tune into my other senses, mm-hmm. you know? And I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't even know that part was hurting, mm-hmm. you know? And so, yeah, I had to forego the vision, you know, sense to connect to other senses. And, you know, so it's the sensory looking inward, but it's also... Yeah, like I'm not ready for feedback to deal with other people's reactions right now, yeah. Of what I may or may not be looking like to them.
So. Well, and as you're talking, I'm thinking, you know, to when whatever eyes are closed, then there's the opening and the intimacy too that then comes from like what you shared earlier. Then if you do interact with someone, the intimacy of seeing them. And then being seen.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the thing, again, there's traditions of movement and these kind of free movement. And, you know, the five rhythms is, I think, one of the original ones of this kind of era, if you will. And so there's five different rhythms they talk about. I'm not going to try and, you know, give them all right now. I can't, but they're different energies that we can feel in the body. One's more flowing, one's more static, one's more staccato and kind of high energy. And what I've noticed is that, you know, these leaders, they're basically DJs / facilitators, you know, they use their voice and also they lead with the music, that in that process, something opens up for me that I get out of my head and into a more accepting space, accepting, less judgmental of myself and of other people, you know, because I know I can be judgmental. It's not my desire to be, but sure. You know, my family culture is a judging culture, you yeah. know, and so to be able to do that is like a magical gift, to like be able to let go of that judging mind, because then the presence of connecting with somebody, it's so much more pure and beautiful and yeah. and just like, wow, we're just humans here, you know, and the joy that can be shared in that simple. And so, you know, the wisdom of how these classes are structured can really, you know, again, different teachers, everybody's got their own preference for how it works, but then also some are, of course, more experienced than others. And yeah, I've been really impressed sometimes with how much they're able to bring us to that place yeah. of moving beyond judgment and to, you know, like freedom and joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that sense of, again, a lot of what we talk about here is the sense of safety that we all want, that we all crave. We all want to know that we're okay. And I think you can relate to this, or I can think of like when I'm in my head with anything in life, but let's just take this movement stuff. And I'm in my head, and if I see someone and I'm in my head and all my voice stuff, right? Mm-hmm. All this stuff's going through my head. How I'm feeling about myself is how I feel like I'm already received back from that person, versus that state that you just said where I'm out of my head, there's no judgment. You could probably almost, this is a little bit of an exaggeration, but you could then run into like a dictator and they would almost see your joy and not, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, like right. That's how powerful our internal,
yeah, it's so liberating.
Yeah, yeah. How powerful our internal state is, that how we perceive the world is how we receive it back. And I feel like that analogy of what you just said versus, I'll speak for myself, if I'm in my scarcity mindset and there's, mm-hmm. I'm cut off and I'm thinking this person's judging me and all that, that anxiety, that whatever stuck energy, it's going to clog the interaction.
Yes, yes.
I'm not going to be seen, or I don't think I'm going to be seen, and I'm definitely not going to see them because I'm so fixated on my own shit, you know, my own world. And
yeah, and these things all go together, you know, like, you know, a part of what I've noticed in myself is when I'm afraid, I don't breathe enough. My breathing is really shallow, and I hold. And, you know, if you're not breathing deeply, you know, you're
actually, sorry to interrupt you, but that's such a great thing. Like, let's just pause right now. And if whoever's listening too, let's just all take a deep breath, right?
Yeah.
They're like, who is this guy? This is the cheesiest podcast ever.
No, but these like, moments to remember.
But even just now, I'm like, oh yeah, I could be more conscious of my breathing just now. When
that's
you just
right.
said that, I just needed that small reminder. But go ahead. I cut
you
off.
It's so easy, you know, when I'm feeling anxious or whatever, to lose that mindfulness to even know that I should be breathing more. And so when I go to these classes, no matter if I've had a bad week or a good one or something, you know, the movement, getting the blood pumping and different things. And then I'm breathing, I'm naturally breathing because I'm moving, you know. And then, you know, it's just, it's like a positive feedback loop that then starts to engage or disengage my mind, my mental system, as, you know, however you want to think of it, so that I can really be present, you know, with myself and with other people. And yeah, and I feel... you know, I feel so high after these things, if you will, you know, without any substances. And that is, it's an amazing, amazing gift, you know. And I, where we live, there's unfortunately, well, there's homeless people, but there's also people who are clearly have drug dependency problems. And, you know, I have friends who have struggled with different drug dependency. And, you know, you can, having this experience, you realize you don't need these things to be quite high, you know, quite feeling amazing in your body. You know what I'm saying? And so it's a real gift. And I think it's a, it fills that gap that these substances, you know, different things people, drugs people use of whatever kind, they rely upon, but they're crutches, and they are damaging, you know, a lot of times they hurt our health. So I'm grateful to have found this way to unwind and to free myself, you know, after maybe a stressful week of work or whatever.
And I think you're hitting on an important part of this, it seems like, too, is that you said at the beginning, and it's like, I could do this by myself, I could do this alone. And sometimes you do, sometimes I do, I'm sure anybody that's done these, but there is something different when we're doing it with other people.
Oh,
like
you
mentioned, you know, the space, this container, if we're blessed enough to, like you said, have leaders that facilitate it. And I think that's the part that it seems like everyone most craves and wants is connection and that picture of what you were just describing. And yet it's the very thing, it seems like, that no matter how many times even I do it, I have to overcome sometimes resistance to... Like it's the very thing.
It's a stretching.
It's the very thing that even though it's the thing we most want and we know we need, there's this resistance there that sometimes it's the thing we most fear at the same time. And I'm wondering, I'm asking the question, I guess, is what is it that we think, what is that fear that we're not going to be what? Like what, why is it so much easier sometimes to give into that fear, whether it's movement and dance or whether it's doing something that's more communal in nature, there's a risk there.
There's a risk, and again, it's the way, you know, do you feel that there's a path in and through it that feels safe to you? That's a part of it, I think. I don't have the answer. I'm just brainstorming.
Yeah, no, that's what this is, yeah.
Another piece is it depends on how much pent-up feeling and stuff there is, because it's a risk to feel in general. You know, if we've been shut down or had a difficult week with very difficult emotions, the idea of opening that box, you know, is like, oh man, I don't even know if I can open that. Am I going to cry here? Or am I going to want to scream? Or, you know, we wonder if it's going to, if the container is going to be big enough or safe enough. I think that's a part of it.
And that could relate to whether it is the space of movement or some other form of connection, group connection, where somebody is trying to whatever. Sometimes it can feel more isolating to to be around people and to feel alone around
people.
That's
right. Yeah, that's another way that it can go, is that if you feel like weird or something's wrong with you,
you don't fit in.
Yeah. Exactly. And that you know, it is possible to struggle with that as you're moving stuff, you know, that can come up. And, you know, I think the main thing though that I've learned is that it's like going to the gym or doing, you know, any exercise, you know, see, I'm sure people can relate of like, you're like, well, I usually feel better after going to the gym, but I really don't want to go right now.
So you true. Know? Like and going to the ocean. You never regret going to the ocean.
Yeah, but it's a big hassle. You got to get all your stuff together, you know? And so it's like getting over that hump and reminding yourself of just keeping the perspective of, wow, I've done this a bunch of times and I always feel better, you know? And so then I'm like, okay, I just have to get over this hump and get there, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Because even if, whether we're single, whether in a relationship or whatever, it does feel like when we're in that scarcity and that place of isolation, it's like, it's that whole delusion or illusion can then keep us from the very solution.
Exactly.
That's there. That's always like waiting for us. And that like, mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's the movement, five
the
rhythms.
Isolation, delusion, solution.
Yeah. And so then we didn't do what? Go inward and not necessarily always in good ways. And we numb, like mm-hmm. you said, mm-hmm. or we find something because we want to feel something. We want to feel like we're
feel
okay.
better.
Yeah.
Or numb it or numb the bad feeling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Versus then it's like, wow, here I was, whatever. I just got to interact with all these people and I'm so grateful that I did. And yeah. But you used the analogy of like the gym analogy, and like, I feel like everybody, no matter who they are, where they are, they can think of something in their life that they didn't know how to do, that felt scary at some point, mm-hmm. and that now they're actually better or decent at it, and they don't even think twice about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And yet, how many of those things do we in our own lives ever stop to like I'm good at reflecting, wow, Brendan, you've done all these things in like the 7 years I've known you, and yet I find sometimes we don't reflect enough on our own lives in terms of giving ourselves credit for,
sure.
Wow, well, if I did this and like the podcasting thing 6 months ago, that would have felt like, whoa, you know, mm-hmm. and now it's like, I've got two microphones and no garage band. And it wasn't as hard as I was making it out to be, but, mm-hmm. but that resistance was there.
Yeah, I mean,
and that fear of not, whatever, getting it right. If this, you know, anyhow, but
yeah, I mean, and there's these kind of sayings that are familiar or just remind us of, you know, a journey of a 1,000 miles begins with the first step,
yeah.
you know, and just these simple things of like, okay, I'm going to take a step today, no matter how small, you
yeah.
know, and it's like, and scale it back if it feels too scary, or maybe you took a step yesterday and you're like, oh, I'm never going to do that again because it's terrible. You know, it's like, okay, well, break it down. Try something smaller. You know,
yeah.
it's like you can go really far starting with very tiny steps because you know, again, just people who may have gone to the gym or something or have some experience with exercise or anything where you're stretching yourself, you start small and then your strides get bigger and bigger and your capacity gets bigger. But don't worry about that because it's just like start with moving just the tiniest bit. I mean, that I remind myself of that all the time. And it's there's those days where I don't want to, but I'm gentle with myself, but I really try to be brave and stretch because, you know, to me, being alive, if we're not growing, we're dying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If we're not expanding, we're contracting. And I really think that's true.
Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned being gentle with yourself, because as you were talking, I was just thinking about because you do a lot of other things, which we haven't even mentioned, you know, here, but you mentioned that, you know, you code, you're working on your own, this really cool side project. And inevitably there's failure. There's times you've mentioned different movement classes you've done where you felt like you were out of your league. Mm-hmm. I can think of so many things like that where I have just been like, oh my gosh. And I find, this is just me, tell me if you relate to this. In my ideal world, I'm good at giving myself kindness, of saying, hey, it's okay, this wasn't the greatest, whatever. You don't feel like when we did this first interview and I was just like really critical of myself, or the voice was, that voice isn't my true self, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I find sometimes there's almost kind of this theme of like not doing things alone. Again, what helped ground that in so much is that we talked about it and I felt supported. And I find sometimes I need that assist, even in being kind to myself.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you can relate to that or how, but as you, as you've done all these different things and.
Yeah, I'm grateful to friends and my wife for, there's times when I'm like get really down on myself or I feel stuck and somebody, reminding me of, hey, it's going to be okay. That's, be nice to yourself now. And cause I can certainly beat myself up too, for sure.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful to, friends and family to, help me with that when I, am feeling stuck, for sure.
Yeah. Cause it's like, that's the time where I think it's easiest to want to whatever, give up or, I mean, the number of people that have probably picked up an instrument or whatever it is, and I think ultimately what, I don't want to overgeneralize, but what keeps probably us from moving forward is, again, I'm not going to be good enough about this. Or
I think you're right. And one thing that has been an important, it sounds kind of funny, but I do think of it as a discipline for myself, is to really make sure that I'm enjoying what I'm doing, is that does this come from my heart? Is this a heart pull? Because, I have tried things also where I'm picking this up and it's either, I should learn this or this could be interesting. Those like these head-based ideas about something. But it wasn't a joy that came from my heart and my belly, And dancing, I'm like, I love this, And when I get frustrated, maybe I have a week where I'm down on myself and I'm like, this isn't working or whatever. But the pull pulls me back to it,
And how would you say you've learned to differentiate what you just said, the pull of this is bringing joy or this is coming from my heart, and holding that with something that just feels really uncomfortable? Do you know what I'm getting at? Like even the things that bring you joy, there's probably times where it's made you feel really uncomfortable and you might not even be enjoying it in the moment, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Like, have you been able
it's a perspective.
Because that's where a lot of people will quit, right? It's during the stretching part. So I'm just curious.
Yeah, I think though that as an adult, if I say that was too hard, that sucks, I don't want to do that again, then I don't do it again, know? And there's some... that there has to be a reason why I want to do it, why it's worth it to me, know? And, I've also had to work on some, interpersonal stuff, of like, how do my wife and I communicate or these kind of things, we're both strong people and we've had to learn how to like allow ourselves to be ourselves, but also to create space for the other and to find a way to partner together. And that's not always fun, but I love her. It's worth it. She's worth it. My relationship with her is worth it. The dance, the way I feel, after dancing 90% of the time is worth it, And so it's that deeper feeling beyond the moment where, it is important to keep that perspective and to not, quit in a fit of, just a little snap moment where it's like, I knew it got screwed up and now I'm done forever. It's like, okay, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to allow myself to feel the pull back, and to get back up on the horse or to be brave and to do it again. And I don't know, that's how it occurs for me anyway.
Yeah. That's a really good balance. Cause, between, what you just said, like, okay, it's worth it. Like you just know, this is worth it.
Deep in yourself, this is worth it. This is something that's important to myself, my deep self, the best part of me, the deepest part of me, however you want to think or feel about it. And I do feel it in my heart and belly, it's not an idea. Cause I can, again, my family culture is very head-based and, I spent a lot of time with very heady stuff, so I get what that's like. But I've again, like things through the ecstatic dance have allowed me to tune into how do I actually feel, and I've had to learn that. I've had to learn, I actually don't feel good. This is an idea and I'm kind of revved up on an idea, but my it's like the clutch isn't engaged or something, like the engine is spinning, but nothing is not connected with my whole being, So these are just metaphors, but it really all just comes down to taking time to feel how I'm feeling and allow it. And another thing I've had to learn is it's okay to go down through darker feelings to trust that you come back up.
Yeah.
Because for a long time, I didn't trust that, you know, and I've had people in my life who've helped me to see, they've held space for me to allow me to go down. And then you bob back to the surface and you feel way much better than if you're trying to hold on to go, you know, trying to prevent yourself going down. You can suffer like an experience of stress and resistance and also still feeling bad. You're extending it. You know what I mean? And so if you can go down and pop back up, it's going to be just move those emotions. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But again, that was also something else I've had to learn in my life, that it's okay to go down there and come back up.
Yeah. And I think what you're hitting on is so important. And we're talking about one sliver of like movement. Dance is one aspect. Improv is all about like, you know, say yes, right? Even therapy of just like, I'm thinking of all these different places and ways that people have opportunities to get out of their head, like what you're saying, mm-hmm. and to be able to be in a place where, where we reconnect with our feelings, we reconnect with our bodies, whatever that might be. And it seems to be that one of the themes, the two of the themes I'm hearing us talk about is that first we have to give ourselves that permission to do it. And then ultimately trying to find a container where there are other people,
mm-hmm.
because it's so different than us sitting behind our phones or, yes. you know, sitting where we think we're connecting, but it's not the same as
we're physical
like,
beings.
Yeah.
I really feel that we feel each other's totally. Energy and yeah, you know, it's fine to Skype with somebody, a friend, you know, who you wouldn't see otherwise. But I really deeply, deeply believe that we feel each other's field of energy, you know, and I know science will eventually be able to measure that, but I can experience it's very much true. And in close proximity too, you know, there is evidence of that in science of like the OxyContin.
One's a drug and one's a...
A drug that's, and one is actually a chemical your brain...
There's oxytocin and
oxytocin. Oxytocin. Yes, exactly. That's okay. The one that I mean.
other one makes you feel a certain way too, but that's the kind we're not talking about. Yeah, yeah.
But that gets generated through, you know, cuddling basically and for hugs and things like this. So, you know, anyway, there's some evidence that real physical human contact and closeness is important. But I wanted to connect back to what you started with this background we had of, you know, coming from, I'll speak only for myself, but, you know, coming from Catholicism, I was raised as a Catholic in my family. It, just for context, you know, I go to church every Sunday. I have an uncle who's a priest and an aunt who's a nun, you know, so a pretty Catholic family. and I do not consider myself Catholic now. I just say it didn't work for me. You know, and I don't trust the human institution of the church as it's currently constituted. You know, there's various scandals. I won't go into all of this stuff. I'm not here to tear down what works for other people, but I am going to say it didn't work for me. And the body connection, the body disconnection, another way to be disconnected from one's body is through fear. And my experience of Catholicism was a lot of fear-mongering that, again, disconnected from me from myself, you know, of guilt and shame and don't do this and, you know, and doing things out of duty and all of these things, guilt, shame, duty, these are not things that are intrinsic human experiences. These are put on us. I really believe that. And I think that they're tools of institutions to try and control us. You know,
intentionally or not, maybe,
intentionally
right?
or not.
Right.
Exactly.
I mean, we don't know, but it's
intentionally
like, yeah.
or not.
But it does seem like a lot of that is the outcome. Doesn't
it was very unhealthy for me. And I've had to spend a lot of years detoxing that out of my system mm-hmm. because that fear also keeps me from myself.
Right.
You know, so it's like, how do I know how I'm really feeling and what is a deep, you know, a deep heart knowing, you know, I think it's not my head. It's not fear. And it has to be there like over a period of time because, yeah, we all have emotions that come and go, you know, triggered by certain things. That's not what I'm talking about either. I'm talking about long-lasting, you know, love, you know, pulls towards certain things. And I had to like distinguish it from all of these other things. It's an ongoing effort. You know, it's not that I've got it all figured out now, but I'm grateful that I can feel myself separate from those other things that are not my true self.
Yeah. Well, and I think what you're articulating when you were like going back to your Catholicism, and for me, it was the evangelicalism. Even though there are messages, and I think this does get lost sometimes, there are messages of love in there. And I think a lot of people,
for sure.
I mean, yeah. So, and you and I both know that, but yet there are also these, what you just said, these rules and these other things that kind of constrict, almost if love is water, instead of just letting the water flow naturally, maybe there are these really hard edges that get created, or these box, so that we kind of view love as check, 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 like I, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And then a lot of people who go through, I guess the word that I'm hearing nowadays is deconstruction. When we go through this deconstruction process of maybe a belief system that we had, mm-hmm. or keeping the good things about it, but letting go of the ones that are maybe, like you said, more shame-based or fear-based, how that, where was I going with this? Where, when that happens, that it feels new to be like, whoa, like if I always thought love was this, 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 and this, and now I'm finding out it's not, and I'm allowed to be over here. Like this feels like new and vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's one of the reasons more people don't go there, because it is uncomfortable at first. Like, I mean, I think what we started out with when you're talking about the movement stuff, there is this element of stretching, mm-hmm. this, and, but yet if we're willing to do it, I know for myself, and I'm pretty sure you'd say the same, I wouldn't trade anything for, I mean, like, oh my mm-hmm. gosh, like I give thanks that I've gotten to have my palate expanded outside mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. this more narrow.
Yeah. It's growth, you know? And,
yeah.
And it actually, I would say it's connected me more to what I think is the true spirit of the underlying message of, you know, Jesus, for example, of
yeah.
God is love, you know, like just think how profound that is, you mm-hmm. know, and that's what we're here to offer each other. You know, that's like the core message in my mind. And to have, to trust that, to have faith in that, to be able to surrender to that, you know, I've had various experiences, you know, where I was trying to do everything right, you know, following the rules that life told me about, okay, get this kind of job, get this kind of education, get this kind of job, get married, do this, get on the, you know, the ladder, start climbing up, whatever. And it didn't work for me, you know, but that was the greatest gift of all, is to have, to have what was told to me from the outside not work for me. So then I had to start surrendering, you know, my head. Like I used to be so reliant on my head, and I was like, I cannot figure this out. You know, I've really tried to figure this out with my head.
Yeah.
It's not working, you know, so I have to do something else. And so what else is there? Well, there's what I want, you know, there's what I want to do, you know, and there's how, you know, and so then sent me on the journey to, you know, where I am now, but it's given me actually so much more faith and a belief in the generosity and the benevolence of this world, you know, to surrender that I can do that, that I can leave the safety of the shore, you know, sail out onto the open ocean where you don't know where you are, you know, and you don't know if there's land on the other side or what will happen, but to trust your own journey, you know what I mean? And to trust the way the wind's blowing. Not to just go with the way the wind's blowing. That's not the right metaphor, but to allow your life to unfold, you know, in whatever direction it is. And yeah. And it's growth, you know, growth hurts. There's growing pains when you're a child, right? Your bones hurt when you're growing, but that's growth. And of course, who would choose not to grow, you know, as a child? It's like, oh no, I'm going to stay my 7-year-old size and shape. You know, it's like, that's an absurd idea.
That'd make a great movie. Some kid that discovers like, nope, I'm not going to get any older. I want to stay here.
It hurts sometimes, growth, you know, and it stretches us. And sometimes we don't feel ready for it, but I'm more and more trusting through lots and lots of little experiences that this is a benevolent universe, you know, because I really, really did not used to believe that at all. You know, yeah. I was hyper vigilant, like, okay, I got to take care of everything myself. You know, no one's going to take care of me, right. For me, and scanning my environment constantly, so anxious, so stressed out, you know, mm-hmm. not having fun. Yeah, not taking care of myself, and it didn't work. And so again, this was a painful gift of a death of a kind, and then mm-hmm. a birth into a new larger self. And this is how it happens. You know, I just have one more little metaphor that I really like, may seem strange, but you know, if you think about lobsters or creatures like lobsters, what happens is that they molt every so often. I don't know exactly how many years it is, but you know, so they have this hard shell, it protects them, but every so often they're growing inside their shell, and eventually, you know, their shell feels way too small, and they're all constricted and frustrated and irritated, you know, and eventually what happens is their shell cracks open. And then what happens is that they're, I don't actually know the experience of a lobster. I'm just going to project.
this is good. Just keep going with it. I like where you're going. Keep going.
Is that you're so vulnerable. You have this brand new super sensitive skin layer that is now exposed to everything. And you're like, oh my God, it's so intense, you know? And so it can feel totally overwhelming. But then in time, your new protective shell forms around you again. And that is how lobsters grow. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's the way, and I actually feel that's how we grow. You know, our spirits grow that same way, I believe, is that we grow in within our current shell, whatever that is. And then reach a point where you are, you know, feeling very limited by your environment or by your situation. And then you have a choice. I think that's the amazing thing about humans, though, is that we do have consciousness and we can resist growth if we want. I think it's a very dangerous thing to do. I think it, you know, it ends up hurting us in different ways, but you can try and resist it. But then if you choose to open up, you're growing bigger and bigger and your life is just getting more and more amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. So that is what I've experienced to be happening.
Yeah, that's a great analogy and a great kind of a great way to wind down. And you know, I think reflecting on this conversation and just even on that last analogy that you were using of like just how much energy it would take if you're that lobster to like shrink and be like, I'm not gonna like, you know, I'm even though I'm growing and I know I'm growing, I'm gonna try to contract my muscles and try to shrink as much as possible so that I don't this shell doesn't crack, or then maybe the shell does crack and I'm like, well, I'm going to grab some super glue and try to keep it together.
Exactly.
Versus I think the word that comes to me as you were talking versus allowing this natural unfolding that is in all of us and allowing that to unfold. And then circling back to what you talked about the beginning, that we get to be cultivators of our own containers. We mm-hmm. get, and that there is this benevolent, no matter what it is in you and me, of whatever areas of our lives we're expanding into, there's communities of people who mm-hmm, have mm-hmm. done these things or been these things and like that are waiting to like help and support. Mm-hmm, and it gets mm-hmm. back to that anti-scarcity or the non-scarcity mindset of the benevolence of what you just said, that we really do live in a benevolent world where most people really do, more times than not, want to help. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes it's easy to think no, or I'm the only person who's outgrowing my shell and I can't, you know, versus, you know. And so I just think it's so beautiful what you've shared and well, I guess what we've just riffed on or whatever this is, and just that, yeah, that you're also that, not that lobster doing it alone, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that community and that is so critical to reach out and to, yeah, we can't do this alone, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we don't have to.
And we don't. Yeah. And so I guess maybe one final question or thought that I'd love to get your reflections on. For someone that does feel like that lobster, where they know their shell's getting small. Mm-hmm. They know, they're feeling it, they're feeling boxed in, they're feeling whatever. if you can think in your own life what that looked like for you, and you don't have to get specific, but just what would you share as far as like what it's like to, for someone to, because the shell's comfortable, you know, even if it's not comfortable anymore, it's still comfortable because it's familiar, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
How, what way can someone take that first step?
Sure. I mean, sometimes it's forced on us, you know, so I'll just be clear. Like, I was living in a different state at the time. My marriage was falling apart, and my ex-wife's mother was dying of cancer, and my work was falling apart, and everything fell apart, you know? And so then it's like, whoa, you know, what am I going to do now? And I had always wanted to live in California, you know? Something about it. Again, this is the heart pull of like, I don't know anything. I'm just going to go. I visited a few places. I visited San Francisco. I visited LA. I visited San Diego. And I had thought, my head had thought that San Francisco was more the place for me. But I came to LA and I'm like, whoa, I love this. You know, this is great. And I had never expected that because being from the East Coast, LA has such a bad reputation. But I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to move to LA and see what happens. And and then just magical things have. Again, it did not look like what I expected it to look like at all. You know, I found the woman that I love and that I'm married to within basically a week of moving here.
Crazy.
You know, I had just been divorced for a month.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the advice that you get from psychologists and stuff. It's like, oh, just, yeah, go ahead and start a long-term relationship in a new city. And But I felt it. I felt that there was real value there, some magic there that I couldn't turn away from. And so, you know, trusting my heart is what allowed me to you know, get onto this new trajectory. And yeah, the door, one door closing, the window, the new door opening, like I was forced through. And one thing I would also say, and I do think this is a very important point, is be careful about numbing yourself, you know. If you are really numbing yourself out, you can stay where you're not supposed to be much longer than you should be. So it hurts. It hurts to feel these things. Please, you know, try not to numb yourself. Get help. You know, talk to friends. Get support. Get a therapist. You know, get a support group. Whatever it is that's going to allow you to be nice to yourself as you go through this. But please don't try to numb yourself out and resist it, because you know, life's going to get to you eventually, and hopefully more gently than not.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you for thanks for this conversation, and
yeah, thank you.
It's, if anybody's listening, just to end on that note of what Brendan just shared. It's really easy, it seems like, to think when you're going through something really hard to be wondering what's unfolding. But hopefully, in just hearing just this really brief portion today from Brendan's life, you might be inspired to remember that there's something bigger breaking through, even in the midst of what all of us will experience or are experiencing or have experienced, which is pain and perceived suffering. So I hope today's podcast has been an encouragement to you in that regard, as it has been to me getting to talk with my friend Brendan. So thanks for listening.
Thanks, Jay. It's the Scarcity Complex Podcast.